Now, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith, Abel offered God a better sacrifice than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as a righteous man when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, he still speaks, even though he's dead. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please God. Because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. By faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land, like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, Abraham, even though he was past age and Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. And they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had the opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned." Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead. And figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions about his bones. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith, he left Egypt. Not fearing the king's anger, he persevered because he saw him who is invisible. By faith, he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry ground. But when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell. After the people had marched around them for 7 days, And by faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And what more shall I say? I don't have time to tell you about Gideon and Barak, Samson and Jephthah and David, Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouth of lions, quenched the fiery flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured and refused to be released so that they may gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheep's clothing and goatskin, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts, in mountains, and caves, holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. God had planned something better for us so that only together with us would they be made perfect. What is faith? Faith has intellectual properties. It has volitional properties. It is the moment when a person realizes that the evidence for the existence of God compels them to trust this God who created them. It is a moment when they recognize that God simply doesn't just exist, but that God is dependable. It's the moment when the evidence becomes clear to them so that they can make a decision to follow him and to know him. So that when he asks them to go to a foreign country they've never been to, they go. So when he asks them to build an ark when it had not rained, they build an ark. So that when God, the Creator, asks for a father to sacrifice his son, he's willing to go that distance. Faith is being sure of what we hope for. That is, there's a confidence that goes beyond some blind leap off a cliff to accepting the reality of the evidence that there is a creator. It takes faith to believe that everything that we see in the physical world came into being out of nothing, ex nihilo. That's a faith statement. We weren't there when all that came to be. I was listening to a TED talk. And a philosopher or scientist was speaking about the incredible advances in technology that we have available to us today. Things like the Hubble telescope and the amazing ability to see to the event horizon, that moment when all things came into being. We can't see beyond that because it's impossible, but that moment when this universe in all space and time came into being. And he spoke about the reality that we live in a very expanding universe, that stars and galaxies and universes are drifting apart from one another, expanding at an incredible rate. And he spoke about this reality that one day, sometime in the future, and I don't remember the exact year, but sometime long into the future, that galaxies and stars and planets will be so far from one another that we won't be able to use the technology that we have to see them. That is, it's possible that people, if things would last that long, for people to be living on planet Earth and to believe that they are all alone with no other stars and no other galaxies as these galaxies and stars and planets drift apart from one another. It's incredible to think about this vast universe that we live in. It all came into being out of nothing, spoken into existence by a creator. Creator that calls us to step out, to do things that seem illogical, to walk around walls that are impenetrable so that they might fall when we shout. Faith. Hebrews chapter 11 is called the Hall of Faith. It is a picture, a glimpse back in time for us to see how men and women, those who were imperfect, broken, fallible, even prostitutes, men and women who were imperfect would trust the perfect plan of God for their life. Yeah. As you read Hebrews chapter 11, your mind must go back in time to see this huge arc. It must go back in time to see Isaac and Abraham. Abraham with the knife raised, ready to sacrifice his son. Your mind goes back in time to Joseph in the coat of many colors and his brothers throwing him into a pit. And you think about the stories of the Old Testament, and they are incredible. They are profound. They are oftentimes mysterious and nonsensical and illogical. And you look at those stories and you say, man, that is incredible what God did. And the author of Hebrews wants to connect those heroes of faith to present-day Christianity. As a matter of fact, after writing one of the most well-written chapters in all of the Bible, explaining the great stories of faith, he then connects the Old Covenant to the New Covenant. He connects these incredible stories of faith to practical realities for you and for me today. He uses the word that our church is all too familiar with, therefore. It's the first word used in Hebrews chapter 12. I think in one of the most beautiful connections between the Old and New Testament, the author brings these two pieces together with an illustration. I want to set the stage for you as we begin to read in Hebrews chapter 12 together. If you have your Bibles, iPhones, iPads, whatever you use, look there with me. He takes the reader in the first century to something like a Roman Colosseum or some kind of athletic venue in the first century. And he wants them to be thinking of a race that's taking place. And he wants the reader to understand that there is a large crowd of people surrounding these runners that are running this race. This imagery he's going to use to connect the Old and New Testaments together. Therefore, he says, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race that has been marked out for us. And let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him, endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the Father. Consider him. Consider this Jesus, who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that when you run this race, you won't grow weary or lose heart. Beautiful picture with incredible implications to our life today. Therefore, since we are surrounded, that is in the stadium, in the spiritual realm, since we are surrounded by people like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and Moses and Noah and Rahab, and people like Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, and the prophets like Isaiah and Jeremiah, and those like Elisha and Elijah. Since these people are figuratively sitting in the audience watching us run our race, since these are the people in the audience, we should be compelled to run in such a way. Have you ever been watching a sporting event, and in the crowd, the camera pans over to see someone who has been there, done that in the event that you're watching? A tennis match with a tennis pro, former retired tennis pro, in the stands watching the event. It brings clout. It brings some significance to the event. An expert watching those in the midst of the battle or the game. This is the picture the author of Hebrews wants to create for all of us in the room today. That is that Abraham watches our life. That is Isaac is watching and observing the activities of Christ's followers, eagerly wondering and watching and eagerly expecting something significant to happen on the playing field called life. They're watching and they're rooting. Therefore, since we're surrounded by this incredible group of people watching us run, we should run in such a way. What is that way that we run? It's the let us statements again. We learned 5 of them last week about what we should do. This week we see a few more let us statements. Therefore, as we look into the stands and see, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and then let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Boy, this is great, great practical truth. Highly offensive, but incredibly practical. If you study the Greek text and understand what the author of Hebrews was trying to say here in throwing off and laying aside those things that hinder, you need to understand the picture of a first century athlete, a runner. The author of Hebrews is trying to say that in the first century, a runner, before they ran the race, made it a priority to slim down, to lose weight. Because extra weight in a race means a slower race that is run. And the picture here of the sin that entangles, in my mind, I see a runner shedding off all the extra clothing that is not necessary so that they can be very much aerodynamic and able to run with great efficiency, with great speed, the race that they're about to start. This is what happens previous, if you will, to the race. I love the practical implications. The author of Hebrews is saying that there are some overweight Christians. Not only physically, that's reality. That's a reality of life. He's saying that there's some spiritually overweight Christians. And there are some Christians that are entangled. They are caught up or ensnared or trapped in extra clothing, baggage that's not necessary to run the race that Christ has for us to run. I want you to think about this for a moment. Could you imagine a very heavy set guy with a little bit baggy clothing running against those who are slim and fit with the right attire? Could you imagine that picture? Well, I've done you a favor this morning. You don't have to imagine much longer, because that very thing happened and it was caught on camera. There's a man named Trevor. I'll spare you the details of how this happened, but because of circumstances, he was not able to compete in the world athletic events. There was a stage set that the whole, it wasn't the Olympic, but it was the world athletic events. They came together, and this individual, who could not make it into a different event, decided to enter himself into the 100-meter dash. It is said that there were 800 million people watching this race. I want to show you the race, and I want you to listen to what this runner, Trevor, says about himself in an interview after the race was over. Watch this.
I was just really nervous. In my head, I was just hoping that I didn't fall during the race, or I was thinking maybe I should just pull up, fake an injury. I didn't come prepared for the 100 meters.
Now, did you see the picture? That guy's strong. There's no doubt about that. He's lifted some weights, but he was running a race with too much pounds and not the right attire necessarily. Did you? The slim-lined, very much skinny, very much dressed appropriately individuals ran that 100-meter dash in like 9 seconds, 9-something. His time, 14-plus seconds. The camera is shooting. It's a side shot. These guys are like, shoot, 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 shoot. There's a gap. You don't even see the dude. It's like, when is he ever going to finish? Now, to his credit, he recognizes that he was not ready to run the race set before him. And I think in so many ways, that's exactly what happens in our life as well. The author of Hebrews is saying, if God exists, and if God has plans and purposes for us, and if there is a race marked out for us, there ought to be a way in which we run. Slimmed down spiritually, with the right attire, not encumbered or ensnared by the drag of sin. Let's talk practically about what that looks like. Here's the truth. It's easy to gain weight physically. Now, I recognize today that it's that I'm on the hot seat here talking about weight. I got it. My metabolism runs at a ridiculous rate. Thank God for that. As I've told you guys before, if cheeseburgers and French fries and Pepsi, if that ever starts putting lots of weight on me, I'm in trouble. Because that is my diet. Thank God for the metabolism that I have. It's easy to gain weight. You know why? Because you gain weight with things that are sweet and tasty. But aren't necessarily the best for you. I think we do this in our spiritual lives from time to time as well. All of us struggle with seeing those things that are fun and enjoyable. And we consume all of that. And we become spiritually overweight and unfit to run. So we consume our lives with things that bring real joy or real satisfaction for a moment, like a piece of candy, or like a double caramel vanilla bean frappuccino from the world famous Solace Church Cafe Starbucks. But it brings no real lasting value, only temporary joy. We live our spiritual lives like this. Oftentimes we run and we consume, overconsume the immediate pleasures of life at the expense of being able to run effectively the race marked out for us. So what does that look like? Hey, listen, I don't know if there's a bigger OU fan in the room than me. Just this year, that's debatable, I got it. Just this year, I have had the opportunity to purchase season tickets for the OU Sooners. They'll now be in my family for life. And now elementary football is starting, and high school football is starting, and now college football is underway, and professional football is underway. And thank God for the fall. It's my favorite time of year. I love it. But I can be consumed with the love of football at the expense of my walk with God. It's hunting season. Oh, no, you didn't go there, Pastor. It's hunting season, isn't it? There's something to kill now until like the first of the year. And we can be consumed with something that drives us and that's fun and that stirs adrenaline, that moment where we're about to kill that thing flying or that thing walking, at the expense of our walk with Christ. We can be consumed by relationships that take us away from our walk with Christ. We can be consumed by many, many things the world has to offer that are not bad, but that distract us, that cause us to be spiritually overweight. So the question this morning, in light of what we see in the Old Testament, these people who are willing to obey God at any moment, willing to sacrifice greatly, willing to give up greatly, in light of that, what is it in our lives that keeps us from running the race God has set for us? What is it in our life that keeps us, that causes us to be spiritually overweight? Because it tastes good now, but it adds no real value to our life. I can think of things in my own life. You certainly can think of things in your life. Here's the challenge for the believer. The challenge for the believer is to be willing to identify something as good, but be willing to prioritize or balance something that's good in light of something that's great. So I want to encourage you today to consider what it is that you might have out of balance in your life. Is it a relationship? Is it a hobby? Is it an activity? Is it some pursuit that causes you to not be able to run the race God has for your life? The author also says that there is sin that entangles us. The image, again, is clothes that are inappropriate to run the race. It's baggy. It's clothes that aren't fit for the runner. Those things that cause drag in the spiritual life. It's the sin that entangles us. And here's the truth. All of us from time to time become entangled in sin. When you receive Christ as Savior, you're forgiven once for all positionally. You're righteous before God. But practically speaking, all of us from time to time find ourselves entangled in sin. And by the way, it's cyclical. It's not just this linear, I'm free from sin, therefore I'm never battled with sin, and I become just like Christ. But rather, it's from time to time, some seasons take place in our life where we become entangled in sin once again. Lust and greed, anger and bitterness, resentment, unforgiveness, pride, ego, all those things ensnare us from time to time. And so here's the question. What sin right now might it be that you're entangled in that's keeping you from becoming what God wants for you to become? That race marked out for you. Are you willing to lay that aside to be able to run the race that God has for you? So what sin is it that keeps you from running the race? And so the author is making this great picture here. These like crowd of witnesses around cheering us on, and we're laying aside things that are out of balance in our life. We're willing to prioritize our life, and we're willing to lay aside sin that entangles us. We're willing to do that so that we might be effective as believers. We might be ambassadors of Christ. We might run the race marked out for us. And the author of Hebrews says this, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and the perfecter of our faith. What a great statement. Again, he's using some powerful running imagery here. I'm not a runner. As a matter of fact, I gave up running a long time ago when I was in high school. So I may jog a few places. I truly don't try to run very often. It's very, very detrimental to your health to do that. Get hit by a car out there on the road. I mean, there's lots and lots of dangers out there for running. Run. You guys, listen, run. We've got incredible athletes in our church who run, like world champion athletes in our church who run. I say run. Go get it. I won't be with you, but I'll be in the stands cheering for you. But have you ever thought about this? When you run, have you ever thought about the importance of keeping your eyes forward? Now, I'm not saying you don't look from time to time to see what's around you, but have you ever, ever considered the fact that people don't run like this? You know why? Because you actually run slower. Because in your mind, whether you consciously think about this or not, in your mind, if you're running like this, in your mind is going, what in the world's in front of you? What are you getting ready to hit? And so you slow down so that you don't find yourself running into something that you're not looking at. Those who run fast are those who understand that there's a finish line, a direction, a forward motion that you have to look on. And the author of Hebrews says that the fixation of our eyes spiritually should be on Christ. We shouldn't allow ourselves to be distracted by all kinds of other things that compete for our attention, but our eyes ought to be focused, spiritually speaking, on Christ, because it is when our eyes are fixed on Christ and we have shed the weight and shed the extra baggage of clothes that we run effectively, efficiently, swiftly, powerfully. And so I would say, and I would suggest that there may be some here this morning that you found yourself very much adrift in this Christian experience. You've allowed your eyes to be taken off Christ, and you've allowed them to be on circumstances. You've allowed them to be on the storms of life. Maybe it's a physical disease you have. Maybe it's a financial problem you're going through. You allow yourself to be very distracted and therefore become less effective, less powerful in your walk with Christ because your eyes are not fixed on Him. He's the author, the one who created salvation in the first place, and He's the one who perfects our salvation. That is, He's the one who is able to empower us to live out this journey, to go on this race so that we might be effective. So we fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Now, the author wants to summarize this or to bring this to some conclusion in view of what the others have done before us, the old covenant people, in view of them. Let us do these things, fix our eyes, shed the weight, shed the sin. And then he calls us to consider him. Consider him that is Christ who endured such opposition. That is, Christ went through the journey that we go through in life as well. Consider the one who has run before us. Not just those who are in the stands cheering us on, but consider the pace setter, that is Christ himself. Consider him who endured such oppositions so that when you run the race, you won't want to quit. Why is it that when I consider Christ, I don't quit in my own Christian journey? Because I see what he endured in his journey. And as my pace setter, the one who I've fixed my eyes on, I say, if Christ can be rejected, so can I. And I can say, if he faced physical battle, so can I. And I can say, if he endured the cross before him, so can I. Consider the pace setter, Christ himself. So, this is the way that we run. So that we do not lose heart and grow weary. Okay, so here's the truth. There's some people in the room right now. You're spiritually overweight. And God is asking you to reprioritize some things in your life, to bring into balance some things that are out of balance. There are some of you in the room, some of us in the room, you're entangled in sin right now. You're involved in an inappropriate relationship. You're involved in some kind of financial inappropriate situation. There's some people in the room right now. You're entangled in some kind of addiction. Maybe it's alcohol. Maybe it's even drugs. You're entangled in that. And God is saying to you today, if you want to run this race, if you want to be powerful as a believer, if you don't want to be Trevor who gets left behind in the race, if you want to run with effectiveness, this is what you must shed in your life. Let these things go so that you can be exactly who I've called you to be. Would you let them go? Some of you this morning, you are distracted in your Christian faith. You are distracted, and God is calling you to set your eyes back on Christ today, the one who can perfect your faith. And some of you this morning, you walked in the room today, and truth be known, the whole Christian experience, the whole relationship with God is kind of iffy for you right now. And God, through his word, is saying to you, if Jesus endured the cross, you can endure what you're going through as well. Now is not the time to quit. Because when I consider Christ, he's beautiful. He compels me to carry on. I want you to bow your heads and close your eyes today.
Hey, this is Pastor Matt Blair. Thank you so much for taking time to check out our podcast today at solacechurch.com. You know, we realize that it's possible, as you listen to this message today, that God may have spoken to your heart about something. So if you made any kind of spiritual decision, we would love to know about that. You can email us at info@solacechurch.com and let us know what happened in your life today. Once again, thank you so much for taking time to check out this podcast.